Hello everyone and welcome back to the Steward's Office. I'm Sarah and this week we are going to be starting a bit of a new series on the podcast. I thought this was the perfect time to start a series I've been thinking about since last year because there was no race in Formula One this weekend and there wasn't enough news to really warrant me doing a full podcast episode on. So this ended up feeling like the perfect timing to start my F1 Legends series. Now my F1's Legends series is a chance for us just to sit down and dive into some of the greats in Formula One. There are drivers that are mentioned a lot around Formula One, from journalists to commentators to the drivers to the fans, and I don't know about you guys, I might be really familiar with the name, might know the amount of championships they won, might know about the records that they've broken, but I don't know a whole load else about some of these drivers. So these episodes are going to be a way for me to really dive into each driver's careers that are considered greats and legends in Formula One. And to start the series, we are kicking off with no one other than Juan Manuel Fangio. Now, I don't think this is a name you can escape in Formula One when you are talking about some of the greats in the sports, the greatest of all time. Fangio's name is one that will always crop up. He was an Argentinian driver born in 1911 who absolutely dominated Formula One in the 1950s. In 7 full seasons when F1 was a world championship, he took home 5 titles and came runner-up in the other 2 seasons he competed in. He has an absolutely epic and insane career and I cannot wait to dive into this one with you. Now, like I mentioned, Juan Manuel Fangio was born back in 1911 in Balcarce, Argentina. He came from a family of Italian immigrants and at the age of 13 began working as a mechanic. Now, this was a time where automobiles were becoming way more readily available for the rest of the world. But in Argentina, he was still away from the epicenter of automobiles, which were the US and Europe. And aside from starting as a mechanic at a young age, Fangio was also a very good football player. He went through a very bad bout of pneumonia, but after recovering from it, he ended up going into compulsory military service at the age of 21. And whilst Fangio was completing his compulsory military service, he ended up being a driver for his commanding officer, who had seen Fangio driving, was impressed by his skills, and asked him to become his personal driver. His compulsory military service didn't last too long though, and Fangio was discharged from the military before his 22nd birthday. Now, after leaving his military service, he went back to his hometown, Balcarce, and wanted to focus more on football. Now, Fangio was so good at football, he got offers to play at a club, but his teammates at Balcarce told him and his friend, Jose Dufford, that they should focus on their hobby, where Fangio was building his own car. And so he did focus on it more, to the point that his parents gave him space in their shed to do so. And he ended up opening his own garage at this point, after leaving the military and going back to his hometown. Now, this is where Fangio's racing beginnings really kicked off. In 1934, Fangio began racing out in circuits in Argentina. Now, suffice to say that these circuits were deadly because cars back in the 1930s really did not have the safety measures and devices that current modern day racing cars and normal road cars have. You would have drivers getting into a lot of accidents, a lot of racing incidents, and it could be fatal for them. But Fangio ended up finding success in 1940 to 1941 when he became the Argentine national champion. Between that 1940 and 1941 period, there is one race I really want to give attention to, and that was the Gran Premio del Norte in 1940. Now, this race was over 10,000 kilometers long and kickstarted in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and would take 15 days to complete. It went from Buenos Aires to the Andes to Bolivia, Peru, before heading back to Buenos Aires again. There was a whole host of climates the drivers were going to have to get through over a 15-day course. They would go through deserts, they would go through jungles, it would be cold, it would be warm, there would be cliff edges, just a whole load of different situations that the drivers could find themselves in. Now, during this race in 1940, Fangio ended up damaging his drive shaft really early in the race after being hit by quite a large rock. Added to that, then overnight when they were in Bolivia, there was a local person in that village that ended up crashing into his racing car and that ended up breaking his axle. He ended up spending the night trying to fix that broken axle with his co-driver. So, you know what? Being a mechanic from the age of 13 probably came in handy for him here. Once that was fixed, he carried on and then ended up suffering a radiator puncture, which was repaired and then later on needed to be replaced. He also ended up racing 150 50 miles in the desert without any water. And that wasn't all, right? Because he also had the headlights of his car fall off one night and they had to be tied back on just so that him and his co-driver could see where they were going. And despite all of that, that's a lot. I'm not sure how many of our modern day F1 drivers would be able to cope with that much going on and how much they would be able to race with a broken car like that. And how much the FIA would let them race. But despite all of it, he went on to win that race. But like I mentioned, safety measures around this time in motorsport really weren't great. Drivers weren't even wearing proper crash helmets at this point in history. And to be fair, I think most of us would see that as the bare minimum safety measure for drivers. And sadly, Fangio ended up having to deal with his own personal loss and tragedy. 1948 saw Fangio take part in what ended up being a particularly tough race for him. Now, he took part in the South American Grand Prix that year, and that was a 20-day event. Drivers would be going through 9,850 kilometers to get to the finish line. They would start in Argentina, go to Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, and then Venezuela to finish off. Now, his co-driver for this race was someone called Daniel Urrutia. Now, Fangio and Urrutia got to the 10th day of the South American Grand Prix, the halfway mark, and they were on the Lima to North Peru leg of the race, and that meant going through a lot of coastal roads. Now, it was nighttime, and Fangio at this point had taken control of driving the car, but there was a lot of thick fog coming off the sea onto the roads, and it made it really hard to see, even with the headlights on. There was a left bend in the road, and Fangio ended up approaching at 87 miles per hour, which was just a little too fast, considering that he couldn't really see what was going on because of the fog. He ended up losing control of the car and the car tumbled down an embankment. That car tumbling down the embankment meant that Urrutia was thrown out of the car. One of the competitors in the South American Grand Prix, Oscar Galvez, stopped to help Fangio, who had neck injuries. Both of them together found Urrutia and Galvez took them both to a nearby hospital, but sadly, Daniel Urrutia did not survive the injuries. That accident was something that hit really hard for Juan Manuel Fangio and he didn't think that he was going to be able to ever race again and ended up falling into depression. Now, Fangio did end up recovering both from his injuries and the depression he was feeling after losing his co-driver. The success that he had in Argentine racing had caused the Argentinian government to take interest in him. They gave Juan Manuel Fangio financial backing in the form of a Maserati. They wanted him to head out to Europe with the car and start racing because Europe was the epicenter of racing. It was where F1 was really kicking off. Now, that brings us on to his Formula One career, and his first ever race was the 1948 French Grand Prix. Now, this race actually took place before the sad events of the South American Grand Prix and before the financial backing from the Argentinian government. He ended up starting in 11th place in the French Grand Prix and then retired before going back home to Argentina to take place in the South American Grand Prix. Now, in 1949, when he returned to Europe, he obviously had the Maserati that the Argentinian government had given him financial backing for. He took part in the San Remo Grand Prix with that Maserati and dominated in both heats. He then entered another 6 Grand Prix that year and he won 4 of them. Now, I do have to point out here that this was before Formula One became a world championship. F1 only became a world championship in 1950, the following year. And Fangio was obviously there when F1 first became a world championship and he ended up driving with the team Alfa Romeo. This was a car that was really competitive and he ended up winning all 3 of the races that he managed to finish in. And those 3 races were in Monaco, Spa, and in France. Now, despite winning those 3 races though, Fangio did not win the first ever F1 World Championship. That was Farina, who took the 3 wins where Fangio wasn't able to finish the race and also came in 4th place in a race where Fangio had managed to win. Aside from taking part in F1 World Championship races, though, that year, Fangio did also take part in some non-World Championship races. Now, he won 4 of the races that he competed in there and also won some races for the Argentine Automobile Club. Going into 1951, Fangio's second season, as well as F1 as a World Championship's second season, Fangio opted to stay with Alfa Romeo. While there, he won 3 races with the team, the Swiss Grand Prix, the French Grand Prix, and the Spanish Grand Prix. He ended up taking second place in Silverstone, which was a good result, but was hampered by the fact that the Alfa Romeo car that year was very fuel inefficient, and he ended up having to make two very, very long pit stops so that the team could refuel the car. He also took second place in Germany after losing first and second gear during the race. And all of that led to him being able to take home his first ever F1 World Championship out in Spain, which was the final race of the season, 6 points ahead of Ascari. Moving into 1952, and F1 itself had gone through some changes, the championship was now running with Formula 2 car specifications. Now, the team that Fangio was with, the Alfa Romeo, didn't have a car for the new specs, so they had to withdraw from the championship that year. Fangio didn't end up having a car and was out of F1 until June because of that. However, he did go and compete in some non-F1 races again, and this time he partnered up with BMW. So he took part in some of those races with BMW, and then Maserati had agreed with him to race their car out in Monza, which was once again a non-championship race. Now, Fangio ended up missing his plane for the race, so he drove through the night to make it to Monza and only ended up arriving half an hour before the race was scheduled to start. Understandably, he was absolutely exhausted when he got there. He started the race from the back of the grid, and by the second lap, he had lost control of the car. He had ended up crashing, being thrown out of the car as the car flipped over. Because of that incident, Fangio ended up suffering from a broken neck and was taken to hospital, and he ended up spending the rest of the year recovering in Argentina. That incident, though, did not stop Fangio from his love of motorsport racing and did not stop him from wanting to carry on competing. And in 1953, he linked up with Maserati again for the F1 World Championship, back to full health. Now out in Monza, he said that the car had bad vibrations early in the race weekend, and he told his mechanics that if they could sort out the vibrations, they'd get 10% of his winnings. And surely enough, the mechanics sorted it out. He ended up qualifying in second place and then won the race. For the rest of the year, he ended up only taking 3 second place finishes, and that allowed him to finish second in the championship. And I don't think that's bad considering that he'd been recovering from a broken neck the year before. 1954 was an interesting time for Fangio and his teams because he drove with Maserati for part of the year until Mercedes joined F1 midway through the season and then linked up with the Silver Arrows. Now with Maserati, he ended up winning his home Grand Prix out in Argentina as well as the Belgian Grand Prix in Spa. Now with Mercedes, he won his first ever race with them and Mercedes' first ever race in Formula 1, which was the French Grand Prix. He also took a win out in Monza against Ascari and a very young Stirling Moss, both of who had passed him initially. Now, those two drivers ended up fighting for the race win between themselves, but Ascari didn't end up finishing the race because he had engine problems, and Stirling Moss's engine gave up towards the end of the race, and that allowed Fangio to take the race win. It was a really successful year for Juan Manuel Fangio, who won 8 out of the 12 races that he was entered in, and 6 out of 8 of those wins were championship races, and that led to him taking home his second world championship. Now, on top of that, he also took part in the famous Mille Miglia that year. This was a 1,000-mile race in northern Italy, and he drove it with Alfa Romeo. Now, he was leading the race when he reached Rome and then suffered from a left steering arm failure. He did try and keep up with his competitor at the time, Giannino Marzotto, who was a very seasoned race car driver in this particular race, but just wasn't able to get a win with the damage that he had. He also took part in the Carrera Panamericana. You could tell that this was a guy that really, really enjoyed his motorsport racing. Now, this particular race was a 2,000-mile race out in Mexico, a 5-day open road rally. Not only did Fangio go on to win this race, but he also set a new race time competition record of 18 and a half hours. Moving into 1955, and Fangio opted to stick with the Silver Arrows for this season. He also ended up starting a fitness regime so he could keep up with the younger drivers, because even when he started F1 in 1950, he was one of the oldest drivers on the grid. Now, there was one race in particular that really stood out to me in 1955 for Fangio. Now, that was the Gran Premio della Repubblica Argentina, which he did go on to win, right? But absolutely crazy race. There was a 40 degree heat wave at the time this race was being run, with track temperature over 57 degrees Celsius. It was a hot race. Now, he won that race when only a few drivers other than him even managed to finish it. That's how tough the conditions were. And he ended up having severe burns on his right leg because his leg was resting on the chassis that was heating up quite badly. It ended up taking him about 2 to 3 months to really recover from those burns. And that year, he did also attempt the Mille Miglia again with Mercedes this time. He asked the mechanics to check the engine at stop, and they said that nothing was wrong with it, right? So then when he stopped again in Rome, he asked the mechanics again. He said that there was something wrong with the engine, and the mechanics once again said, nope, everything's fine. Now, when he got to Florence, he ended up hearing some bangs, and the mechanics finally opened the bonnet, and what they saw there was that one of the fuel injection pipes had broken. He ended up driving to the end of the race with 7 instead of 8 cylinders, and still finished in second place behind Stirling Moss. 1955 was also a year that Fangio said he would never attempt Le Mans again after the incidents that happened there. There was a super deadly accident where we saw 83 spectators killed, and it all happened in front of Fangio. He saw the accident happen right in front of him. Now, there were a couple of races that were cancelled after Le Mans and everything that had happened there, with only Silverstone and Italy left, where he came in second and first place respectively. That year, he took home his 3rd world title, and Mercedes also bowed out of Formula One after 2 very successful seasons. With Mercedes leaving F1 in 1956, Fangio ended up joining Ferrari. And even though he was coming with a good couple of world titles under his belt, he didn't have a warm relationship with Enzo Ferrari. That season, he ended up taking his teammate's car after getting mechanical problems out in Argentina, Monaco, and Italy. And in those races where he was sharing a car with his teammate, the points were split between both of the drivers. That year, he ended up winning out in Argentina, his home Grand Prix, Silverstone, and Germany. Now, the season ended out in Italy, and Peter Collins, who is his teammate, looked like he was going to be able to win the championship. With 15 laps to go in the Italian Grand Prix, he ended up handing his car over to Juan Manuel Fangio. Because they were sharing a car, they ended up sharing the world championship points, but that allowed Fangio to take home his 4th world title. Moving into 1957, and he moved back to Maserati. Now, he ended up winning at Argentina, Monaco, and France at the start of the season, so it was a good season start to him in 57. Out in Silverstone, he retired from engine problems, and then it was the German Grand Prix up next. Now, he needed to be able to extend his world championship lead by 6 points if he wanted to take home a world championship with 2 races to go. He put himself in the best position possible for the race start when he took pole position in qualifying. When the race began, though, he dropped to 3rd place behind both of the Ferraris. Now, he got past both of them by the end of the 3rd lap. Lap 13, though, he had to pit, and he had a 30-second lead against his competitors, so he was in a pretty good place when he went to pit his car. But the pit stop was absolutely awful, and it knocked him down to 3rd place, 50 seconds behind both the Ferraris. But Juan Manuel Fangio was a man on a mission during this race, and he set fastest lap time after fastest lap time. And by the time he got to lap 20, he set a record-breaking lap time. At the penultimate lap of the race, Fangio got past both of the Ferraris, and he won with a 3-second lead. Now, his main rival for the world championship ended up finishing in 4th place, and that meant that Fangio was able to take home his 5th and final world championship in F1. This also marked his final win in Formula One, and what an epic win it was to go from 50 seconds behind 2 Ferraris to winning with 3 seconds in hand. I think this race for me was a real testimony of his driving ability, and also the drive he had inside to win this race, even though he'd get 2 more chances to secure the title. It's one of those races when I was reading up that I would have loved to have watched it at the time myself. Now, like I mentioned, that was his final world championship, and Germany was his final ever world championship win. In 1958, though, he competed that year, but retired after the French Grand Prix, which was a really nice full circle moment, I think, considering it was his first Formula One race, even though it wasn't a world championship at the time. At the French Grand Prix, Fangio was a lap down, but the race leader Hawthorn braked before crossing the line so that Fangio would be able to complete the full 50 lap race distance. And it was a real sign to show the amount of respect that his competitors had for him. By the end of his career, he won 24 World Championship Grand Prix, and 2 of those were shared with other drivers, with, yes, 5 World Championships under his belt. There was something that happened before his retirement in Formula One, though, and it's something that I feel like has been touched upon a lot. It's one of those things that I feel always crops up when you Google Juan Manuel Fangio, and that was his kidnapping. Now, in 1957, the president of Cuba at the time had set up the Cuban Grand Prix in Havana, and this was a non-Formula One race, right? And we know that Juan Manuel Fangio enjoyed taking part in non-F1 races, non-world championship races, and this was one of them. He ended up winning the 1957 Cuban Grand Prix. In 1958, he went to take part again, and he had set the fastest time during practice. On the 23rd of February 1958, two gunmen from Fidel Castro's 26th of July movement had entered the Hotel Lincoln and had kidnapped Juan Manuel Fangio. Now, the president of Cuba said that even though Fangio had been kidnapped, the race should still continue. Fangio apparently was taken to 3 different houses during his kidnapping, but they did let him listen to the race via radio. He even had his own room in the 3rd house, so they treated him pretty well. Now, the police didn't actually find Fangio. The kidnappers ended up releasing him after 29 hours. Apparently, all the kidnappers wanted to do was to try and get the race cancelled to embarrass the president and the government at the time, and that just didn't work because the Cuban president really just wanted this race to go ahead. Fangio was basically just handed over to the Argentine embassy after the race was done. But what about post F1 life for Juan Manuel Fangio? Well, he was still involved in motorsport and automobiles in one way or another, and that's not surprising because from the age of 13, this guy was working on cars. He was a very successful race car driver. I don't think retirement was ever going to fully pull him away from race car driving or cars in general. So he ended up selling Mercedes-Benz cars and then became the honorary president for life of Mercedes-Benz Argentina in 1987. He was the flagman for the Argentine Grand Prix from 1972 to 1981. He also did some exhibition and demonstration laps in his old F1 cars. He was active in assembling his memorabilia, which ended up turning into a museum dedicated to his racing career. And in 1990, he was inducted into the International Motorsports Hall of Fame, which is absolutely no surprise given the success he had in his career. Juan Manuel Fangio ended up passing away in 1995 at the age of 84 from kidney failure and pneumonia. But his race car driving had such an impact in Formula One, and even after his death, he is a name that I think will always crop up for race car drivers and will always crop up when we talk about the history in Formula One because he was there from the start. Not only was he a super successful driver, but he was a race car driver that was there when F1 as a world championship wasn't just in its infancy, it was a baby. His 5 world championships were some of the earliest world championships that there were to win. Now, his record for those 5 WDCs was held until 2003 when Michael Schumacher took his 6th world title. That record was held there for 46 years. It took a very long time for someone to come along and beat it. And when Michael ended up being that record, he turned around and said, "Look, Juan Manuel Fangio is at a much higher level than what I am." He said that there was just no comparison between Fangio's personality when he won his championships to now. There was just not the slightest comparison, and he had so much respect for what Fangio had achieved. And when Lewis won his 5th world championship and equaled Fangio's 5, he called Fangio the godfather of our sport. So I think you can just tell how much respect so many of the F1 drivers have for him, and he's such a historic figure in Formula One. I think, like I said, he's going to be one of those names that will always crop up and forever, ever be intertwined in F1 history. And look, I'm a girl that loves his maths, loves his stats, and he has been referred to as the best F1 driver of all time through mathematical analysis. Argentina have regarded him as one of the greatest sportsmen that their nation has ever seen, which I think is a very fair shout given all the success that he had in motorsport. But I think when I was reading up on Fangio, when I was putting together all the information that I needed for this episode, what stood out for me is that he was a driver that even when the team might have failed him, when strategy wasn't great, when pit stops were awful, when mechanically the car was just falling apart, he would still do everything that he physically could to pull out a win and overcome the problems that the rest of the world were giving him and his car. To win 47% of the races that he had entered during his career when F1 and motorsport was so dangerous at the time makes all of his achievements all the more remarkable to me, especially considering that he was seen as one of the older drivers, and not just seen as it, he was one of the older drivers. Even in 1950, like I mentioned, when he joined, he was one of the older drivers on the grid, and I just think that's incredible. But that is Juan Manuel Fangio. And look, yeah, I had known his name. I had known about his kidnapping. I had known about the Five World Championships. And I'd known that a lot of the drivers and people in Formula One really looked up to him and what he achieved. But I hadn't known about specific races that I had mentioned and the things that he'd overcome and some of the incidents and losses that he had to deal with in his career and in his time alive. And so I really, really enjoyed being able to look into that and just learning more about him. And it's made me have so much of a greater appreciation for him. I love this style of episode. It's a little bit different. It's not current news, I know. It's not, you know, what's gone on a race weekend. We are really delving back into the past of some of these drivers. But I absolutely love learning about the history of things. And yeah, to see historic drivers like Juan Manuel Fangio and really understand why people look up to them was super fun for me. So I hope you guys enjoyed it too. If there are specific drivers that you regard as an F1 legend, please drop me a message on TikTok or Instagram at stewards_office, or, you know, drop a comment on the YouTube video. Let me know who you would like to see covered in a Legends of F1 episode, and I will hopefully get around to it. Thank you guys so, so much for listening, and diolch yn fawr, and make sure you follow or subscribe to this podcast so you get updated every time I post a new episode, and I will see you guys the next time you're summoned to the steward's office.